post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
Welcome to the Near Post. My name's Eamon Flanagan. We're talking football across the Australian Community Radio Network. With me in the studio, no longer, we have to say hello to Fitzham. He's out there doing what he does best, not just talking football, but coaching football. So we'll say farewell to Fitzham for a few months. He'll be back to join us, no doubt, when the season breaks or whatever. But we have Michelle Bertrand with us in the studio. How are you, Michelle?
Good evening, Eamon. I'm well, thank you.
Good. Good to see you. And also alongside Michelle is Russ Gibbs. How are you, Russ?
I'm good. Sad that Fitzham's not here, though.
It is sad, but the Central Coast, maybe as a Central Coast fan, it's better for him that he's not here.
He picked the right week, didn't he?
He did, as they take on the Japanese Giants tonight. Okay, coming up in this week's show, we're going to talk Asian Champions League, of course, and hear from Laurie McKinna and Matt Simon, ahead of their big game against Kawasaki. And also... We're going to talk about the A-League, the draw. The new draw's out this week, and there's a new final series. We've got all that and more. And we'll just chat the night away, no doubt. Now, you can always catch us on the blog or on the podcast, www.nearpost.blogspot.com. Had a little go at Twitter last night, Russ, but I'm kind of over Twitter already, so I've gone back to just staying on the blog. I don't know. Have you been on Twitter?
I haven't, no, not yet. No, I'll stick it well clear of it.
I'm waiting to go for life beyond Twitter. You know, it's kind of Facebook, Twitter, and then there'll be something else, won't
there? There'll be something else, yeah.
So why bother?
Brand new football forum.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, we dedicate the show every week. I'm from a place in England called Burton-on-Trent. Now, we don't always talk about English football on the national show, but tonight I thought, because I'm from Burton, a little story, dedicate the show to Roy McFarland. Do you know who Roy McFarland is, Ross?
Ex-Derby County
and also England International. Now, ex-Derby County, so Burton actually is a little town, industrial town, just 8 miles from Derby. So they've never been in the four football leagues. They've always been well outside. Well, anyway, this year, coming into December or so, they were about 20 points ahead of the nearest team. Nigel Clough, who you may know, Brian Clough's son, Nigel Clough, a former Liverpool Notts Forest player, he got the job at Derby County and became their manager. He was the manager at Burton in the non-league, whatever it's called. And so he left, and they're 19 points ahead, guaranteed to get into the Football League for the first time. They've got a new stadium built, so it holds about 7,000. They've never had more than about 1,500 people at the game. But anyway, they appointed Roy McFarlane. And Roy McFarlane, when he got the job, his first comment was, "There's no easier job in football. I'm 19 points ahead. I can't fail." So there's two games to go, and I think they're 4 points ahead. They've played the second game against Oxford United, at home. 6,500 turned up to watch the Brewers, as they're known, because it's the brewing capital of the world. They lost 1-0. There's now one game left, and I think they need a point to get up. So, Roy McFarlane, we dedicate this show to you, mate, because if you stuff up with my hometown one chance, having been 19 months ahead...
To get out of the Blue Square Premier.
In fact, I've actually rang them up and said, can't we just bring Nigel Clough back as manager for one game? But the game is away to Torquay, so I have no faith that Burton will do it. Anyway, that's a dedicated
show. Massive choking for Burton.
That's right. And the quiz question this week is nothing to do with English football. You'll be glad to know. The A-League kicks off, or the new fixture round is announced yesterday. Name the first round fixtures in the A-League season. That's going to test you.
To the cup, the near post will wish them luck. The near post will wish them luck.
Okay, Michelle Russ Gibbs, I know you've come straight in from work. This is probably the toughest quiz I've had. The A-League season's about to kick off. The draw's been announced. There's five games this time in every round because we've got 10 teams. Who's going to be playing in the first round? Anybody?
North Queensland with Robbie are playing Gold Coast United?
That's wrong. Well done, Ross. Good start. Michelle?
Well, Newcastle is playing Wellington.
Newcastle are playing Wellington. You see?
Is it Sydney, maybe?
All over you. Any more, Michelle? You're fantastic. That's one.
Yeah, I think it's Sydney.
Is it Sydney?
Okay. I'm going to
North
give you...
Queensland is playing
Yeah,
Sydney.
So you got that wrong, so I'm not giving you that, Ross. Okay.
I don't want it.
Any more, Michelle?
Central Coast are playing someone.
They are.
I'll get that bit. You can get who they're playing against.
Let me think. Adelaide against...
Who?
Perth.
Perth Glory.
Adelaide versus Perth. I'm going to give you half of that one, Russ, and half to Michelle. there is one massive game. Absolutely massive.
Melbourne Victory versus...
No, come on. Well, they are going to be playing who?
Central Coast.
Well done, Michelle.
And of course, and that must mean Gold Coast are playing Queensland Raw.
Well,
is that
is, of course, the biggest game in terms. So the draw is Melbourne versus Central Coast. That's the Thursday night, August the 6th, so it's a bit earlier than normal. Adelaide versus Perth. North Queensland with Robbie Fowler versus Sydney FC. That's the 34-year-old Robbie Fowler, so don't be getting too excited because it's going to be 34 degrees and he's not going to be running.
I'm excited, actually.
Oh, sorry, be excited. And Queensland, which will be known by then as Brisbane Roar. Brisbane Roar versus the Gold Coast. Ben Buckley, the CEO, is expecting 50,000.
Really?
That's what he said, and I believe him.
50,000.
I believe.
That's more than enough. Melbourne can get.
And Newcastle versus Wellington in the last game, they're expecting 6,000.
Wouldn't spoon. Is it too soon to say that?
So, not after they win the Champions League.
So there are some. That's the draw. There's five rounds, so we've got more games every weekend. There's some changes to the league, I guess. First of all, Queensland Gold Coast into the league. What do you think?
North Queensland and Gold Coast, I think it's a positive move. I mean, the more teams that we can get in, the better it will be, as long as it doesn't dilute the quality too much. I'm excited to see the Gold Coast, though. They've been talking themselves up quite a lot pre-season since they were given a licence, in fact, so it'll be interesting to see if they can back up their words.
It would. I think we need that, though, Gold Coast talking themselves up. Great to have Jason Kalina about leading the team from, you know, he's just scored against Ajax on the weekend, so he's going to be absolutely top-class European fit, ready to go, so well worth watching. And the Gold Coast, of course, were complaining because they wanted the first game at home, which is not unreasonable. You know, you get a big crowd the first game at home. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I think, the game's gone to Brisbane, Suncorp Stadium, where Ben Buckley said, well, you know, we'll probably get 50,000 people. That's an even better way to start. Should the Gold Coast have been given the first game at home, Michelle, or do you think it's better in Brisbane?
Oh, better in Brisbane, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think it gives a big boost to the Brisbane fans as well, you know. So,
and it's not that far to travel.
No, it's not that far, so it'd be a good atmosphere. So that'll be a cracking game. Melbourne will start off with a reasonable crowd, I would think, 20,000 plus in the Central Coast. You'd expect North Queensland, Sydney to. And this show comes from Canberra, and you guys, I mean, there's no A-League football in Canberra yet, and judging by the story that we've just seen on the website about one of our major supporters, Melissa Fisher, owing $23 million, there might not be a new team for a long time. But we don't give up on that easily in camera. But what I was going to say, North Queensland, Sydney, that's the game for you, Russ. You know why?
Why is that one?
Because the Virgin have just introduced flights from Canberra to Townsville direct.
Bargain.
Ooh. So there you go.
There are lots of people that want to go and see Robbie play.
All those Liverpool fans nip up there for the game and back in 3 hours.
I think they're get a good crowd. Hopefully they will get a good crowd and they can keep it up. Just popping back to the Gold Coast question, I don't think the fact that they're not at home in the first round is going to affect their crowd for the second round fixture. They'll still get a massive crowd.
I think
so.
I mean, it's a great stadium, actually, the Skills Stadium.
It's probably one of the best football stadiums in the country. And in terms of A-League, it's going to probably be one of the best with Suncorp for watching games at.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the only 27,000 is all it holds. So if you get 15,000, 20,000... any week, you can have a great atmosphere, I think.
So. It's specifically built for rugby, obviously, but but what I'm saying is, obviously, it's not got that oval shape around it like some of the other grounds, so it's going to be great for an atmosphere.
You mean it's not a cricket or an AFL level?
And I did read that it's got good acoustics because of the way they built the stands over the top.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I was talking.
But there's
to
no parking.
I was talking to the people who built
parking.
The stadium. No parking.
Well, no
you
parking.
Come by, you come on train, don't you?
Yeah, apparently you come by train. So there's no parking at the ground. So if you're thinking of going to a Gold Coast fixture and you're listening to this, make your travel arrangements in advance and check it out.
Maybe that's why Canberra don't get many crowds, because they all go by train. And it's nowhere near the stadium.
It's a long walk from Kingston.
Yeah. So some of the other... so we're going to have much more football. We're also going to have midweek games, particularly in December. So there's going to be one midweek game each week in December. So that's a Wednesday night game. Games like Queensland again versus Brisbane versus North Queensland, Sydney versus Central Coast, a whole heap of them, actually. What do you think about that, introducing midweek games?
I think it's really interesting. I think it's going to make the league... a lot more interesting, because you're going to see that teams are going to be playing catch-up games. So they're going to be, for example, let's say Sydney are 6 points off the pace or 3 points off the pace. They'll have a game in hand. It's all the pressure comes on them. Then it'll be, I think it's going to make the league a lot more interesting.
Yeah, it will. But I think for teams like Gold Coast, North Queensland, I think their fan will have to travel, and it's quite far. So I don't know how they would travel on a weekday.
No, that's right. I mean, there is a long way to go in the midweek game, so you're not likely to get very many away supporters there. I mean, I think they've put on Brisbane versus North Queensland, but even that, you know, it's still a fair trek down to Brisbane from Townsville. So you're not expecting many away supporters, I guess. But, I mean, I suppose, yeah, I mean, that's just one of the things that may go by the wayside for some of those games. But having said that, I think introducing the midweek games adds a bit of... yeah, I mean, it's good for the fans who aren't at the games, because you'll get midweek football. And it also kind of, if you like, educates people that, you know, we can go to football in midweek, because not much Australian sport takes place midweek, you know, in any of the codes. Rugby league, AFL, very rarely play midweek. So,
well, it keeps the game in the spotlight as well, doesn't it? If there's midweek matches, it means that we're going to get a lot more exposure. There's more games this year.
That's right. And probably bigger TV viewers, because if you've got one game on a Wednesday night when there's nothing else on in the week, you know, there's a fair chance you're going to increase your TV audience.
Yeah, I mean, the floating fans as well, I suppose. If you're in and around that area, I mean, I don't know what the difference would be in terms of, maybe you want to go and watch the Gold Coast on a Saturday, and then if you're in Brisbane, there's another game to watch in the week. I mean,
okay, what about the final series? We've got 10 teams in the league. We're going to have 6 teams in the finals. So a couple of changes. So 6 out of 10 teams. Some people have been criticising this, saying that's too many teams getting into the finals. Michelle, what do you think?
Oh, I think it's great. The more games, and makes it a little bit more exciting.
Certainly does. I mean, I think basically also what we've got is we've got 1v2, that'll be a two-legged game. The rest of the games, like 3v6, 4v5, they'll be one-off games. I think the one-off games will be quite, it adds, you know, the fact that only the first versus second is going to be the two-legged affair. The rest of them will be just one-off games. It'll be fantastic.
Knock off, yeah.
So obviously the winner of 3v6, 4v, that play each other, and then,
yeah, that's right,
and then play the loser of 1v2.
Yeah, so there's only actually there's only the first and second team that play a home and away. The rest of them is more or less an FA Cup style winner takes all.
Well, that's going to make it even more exciting, and it gives a chance for teams that haven't been in the finals, like Wellington Phoenix, who were missed out just a bit last year, to actually make it this year and give their fans a chance to watch some finals football.
What about the fact that if you come sixth, you know, you can still win the final?
You can.
And people don't like that, and it means you get into the, you know, Asian Champions League, possibly.
But I do. I love the finals. I think it gives the winning team, you know.
I think you're right, Michelle, and I think you're the new face of football. You know, the traditionalists don't like it, but I'm with you. I think it adds excitement, it adds crowds, it adds money to the game, which we need. But it also just adds that real sort of do or die. We'll have penalty shootouts, no doubt, between the third and the sixth. And if you look at the NRL and the AFL, basically, a team that comes eighth normally get booted out the first week anyway.
I mean, if you're finishing sixth in the league, the chances of actually going through to actually win the whole competition are going to be pretty slim. It's going to take monumental effort.
Yeah. And I think also part of the thing is when the league expands again the following year, which they're talking about it doing to 12 teams, it'll be 6 from 12. So, you know, that's all right.
Yeah, it's just putting things in place.
So the near post is happy. Now, we've got an Asian Champions League on tonight, and we're going to talk listen to Lauren McKinnon and Matt Simon in just a moment.
From Perth glory to the Central Coast, from Melbourne victory, hear the Queensland roar. This is the Near Post, going coast to coast.
The Near Post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the Near Post, get there first.
Asian Champions League match day 4, Central Coast Mariners take on Kawasaki Frontale in Japan tonight. 5-0, they lost the last leg. And Newcastle Jets will play Nagoya Grampus tomorrow. Before we get to the Asian Champions League, because it is community radio, we've got some news. So we'll flip back to the news.
A bit of news. Okay, we'll start with the Australian-Turkey friendly football matches to be played in Kanakale, I think that says, and Gallipoli, Turkey, on the 24th and 26th of April 2009. So that's this week. Two matches between Australia and Turkey, and that's at under-16s level, is it?
That's right,
it?
Yeah, the Joeys are playing there.
The Joeys.
And you know how much I love to mention the Jets. Ljubo Milicevic is expected to play in the A-League for the Jets.
Yeah, they had talked about him going to Hajduk Split, whatever, but I think if he plays with the Jets, personally, he's as big an impact on the A-League as Robbie Fowler and the other fella. Jason Cleaner, in terms of his play. Like, because his play, he can only get better, and I think he's as good a quality as those two, and in terms of match performance, I think.
But would he make as much an impact as Brazilian legend Denilson, who's been linked with Perth Glory?
No way. He's not coming, is he?
Well, who knows? He's been linked. He's been linked. Robbie Fowler was linked and he turned up, so...
That's right. The pre-season cup's been scratched. Are we happy about that?
Yes.
We are.
No one really cared, did they? No. There was no TV coverage. There was no exposure of it. It was just...
The Near Post hated it.
I think they should start playing pre-season friendlies more against, like they've done, been doing, Central Coast have been doing against local state league teams. And
I'd like to see a little, overseas teams coming in to say Sydney, Melbourne, and a couple of four-way
like tournament. Wolves.
Sunderland.
And maybe the teams that can't get in, like Central Coast, Newcastle, they could play a 14 comp against some of the state league teams. So you've got lots of little four-week league tournaments going on. So, but anyway.
Speaking of the Central Coast, Canberra may be hosting a Central Coast game during the season. There's a couple of TBCs on your fixture list there, isn't there, Eamon?
Yeah, there is. Central Coast haven't hitched up all their home dates. And Mike Cockrell, this came from Mike Cockrell in the SMH, and Mike often gets it wrong, so we'll wait and see. Adelaide released Robbie Eunice. Robbie Eunice is homesick, so he's gone back to Sydney, which... that's sad, isn't it?
I thought he played quite well for them, and he's a bit homesick. He's gone back to Sydney.
How far is it from Adelaide to Sydney? Eh? Hasn't he heard of the internet these days? Got the phone, haven't you?
But I don't know. I've never lived in Adelaide, so... It must be awful.
It must be
dreadful playing for a team that got to the Asian Champions League final and won the league. And
anyone who lives in a pissant town would probably get homesick.
Absolutely, of course.
And the new Shane Smeltz has arrived. I'll let you... Russ, this is your call, mate. You've got to call this one.
The new Shane Smeltz. Shane Smeltz, obviously, as we all know, is the greatest centre forward ever to grace the A-League. And he's moved off to the Gold Coast. And so Wellington have replaced him with a huge name from the UK, Tranmere Rovers' Chris Greenacre. So massive. Big news for Wellington Phoenix. And I think you were saying before, and he was top scorer for Tranmere Rovers for the last 10 years or something like that.
Well, it won't matter if he wasn't, because we won't really know, will we? But no. Somebody, I read that somewhere.
If there's someone out there that does know anything about Tranmere Rovers' Chris Greenacre, then we'll be happy to hear from you.
The new Shane Smeltz.
And if you're listening, Chris, welcome.
Yeah. Oh, give us a call.
Yeah, welcome to Australia.
Yeah, I don't think he's come yet. Scott McDonald scored for Celtic in their latest 2-0 win, and then said that he wanted to go and play in England. So
To Aston Villa.
Martin O'Neill.
Yeah, why not?
Nah. And Timmy Cahill scored. Well, no, he doesn't. He misses a penalty, actually.
It still hasn't landed.
But they still beat Manchester United reserves, and good to see an Australian in the FA Cup final.
I'm Sally Shippard from the Matildas. If you're going to the near post, get there first.
And as we keep our eye on the other coast, the former football great and now rugby union supremo, John O'Neill, he said yesterday that the AFL should keep out of Western Sydney. It's not their natural home. Good one, John.
Well done.
And... also, former Wallabies coach John Connolly warned of the increasing struggle for Union to make headway with the increased threat from AFL League and football. Interesting that Union seems to be the game perhaps most under threat. It'll be interesting to see how the A-League crowds go with the extended season. 51 extra games, 27 rounds, whether it can actually establish itself further.
Club rugby in Australia has always struggled a bit, though, to grab crowds, and it's only at the Super 14 level that they get anyone watching the game. So
yeah, well, it's obviously not going to... they're going to have further problems, aren't they, with football... continuing to get momentum, and maybe they'll continue to lose players. I don't know. So anyway, we'll watch that, no doubt, as the difference between the coaches. Now we're going to talk Asian Champions League. Laurie McKinnon. Before we speak to Laurie McKinnon, we'll talk to Russ Gibb and just say, Russ, your team lost 5-0. Put yourself Central Coast Mariners coach. Your team lost 5-0. You're going away to Japan this time to the same team. What's your tactic? Then we'll hear from Laurie.
I think it's cliche time. You take each game as it comes. You've got to block that one out. Pretend it didn't happen. There's no way that they can possibly lose 5-0 again.
And just do the opposite of what you did.
Yeah, I would go 4-3-3 and just play it as a normal game. I mean, it's not as if it's a two-legged affair that they have to win 5-0.
Okay, well, that's
win's a win.
That's what Michelle and Russ think. A win's a win. Michelle and Russ think that. Let's hear what the man who gets paid, Laurie McKinnon, and his main striker, Matt Simon, have to say.
Now, it's totally different for Tianjin, but the boys are going to get ready for a 2020 cricket game because the park is very, very fast and very firm, but, it's beautiful. But the boys think it's more like a cricket park than a football park. And it's everything's good. The preparation's been good. I think I said after the game they're probably the best team we've played, but we need to be a lot tighter on defence from the front to the back. you know, and we need to take chances. We created 3 or 4 really good chances at crucial points in the game that could have turned it, but, you know, credit to them, they went on with it. They got a couple of goals up and razzle-dazzled a bit as well. So, you know, we have to be tight and play as one unit all over the park and hopefully take a chance or two. Yeah, the two of them will come back into the squad. You know, we're going to make a few changes because we have to. You know, some boys have been doing well at training. Now their opportunity comes when, after a bad performance, it's always boys who put the hand up can get a spot. And a few of them, Clarke will get back in, Gooms will be back in, Matt Simon, Pej Bojic. So there'll be a few changes. It'd be great to get something, you know, but I think the two later games in the group stage are going to be the ones where we've seriously got the opportunity to get something. But we can get anything out of here tomorrow, it'll be a huge bonus for us. And, you know, pick us back up, because obviously after getting scalped 5-0 the other week, the boys were pretty low, and we have to get a wee bit of pride back in the performance. Nah, definitely, we have to do that, and that will set us up for the last two games. So get some confidence back, confidence in each other, and after a humiliating defeat, show the Japanese we can play.
Yeah, man, it's pretty good, you know, the training pitch we've been on today, it's pretty nice and flat, and we're just looking forward to, you know, trying to make amends for the last result, and looking forward to Tuesday night. Yeah, as you say, you know, it's pretty bad result, and you know, we've got to turn that around. I think it's the worst result in the club's history. So the boys, you know, it's not always good losing like that. It's quite embarrassing for the boys. So we're just, you know, really looking forward to showing that we are a quality side and we can compete with these teams. Yeah, the training's lifted, and the boys are. We've had a talk, and the boys are very keen not to get a repeat of what happened last game. And, you know, by the looks of training and the attitude of the boys, I think we'll do pretty good on Tuesday night. Yeah, well, you know, you saw their fans at Blue Tongue. They had a pretty good following, so I'm expecting a big crowd and the same sort of thing over here. You know, they are a pretty good side, but all their goals, I think, from watching from the stands, you know, it was sort of 5 mistakes from us. So I don't think they're a 5-goal better team than us. So if we can fix those mistakes and, you know, have good discipline, I'm pretty sure we can get a result. Yeah, definitely. You know, it's always, you know, heartbreaking when you got to sit on the sideline and watch games, and especially when you watch your teammates go through what they did last time. So really looking forward to getting back out there, and hopefully I can get back on the score sheet.
And that was the voice of Matt Simon, the Central Coast Mariners striker who's back. Nicky Merger won't be playing, of course, because he's done his hammy, which is unfortunate for the Mariners fans and for him, because he was, struggling to get back to his best, but he obviously needs games. Central Coast Mariners playing away. They got hammered 5-0. There was an outcry across the Australian football community at the difference in performance. Michela, can they do any better away in Japan?
I would like to think they can, but I don't know. Their defence was appalling, so if they could fix that, I think they might get a draw. But I think they probably lose.
They probably will. I would agree. What do you think, Russ?
As I said off the air, if it was a 2-legged game, they'd be in all sorts of trouble, because there's no way they're going to win 6-0. But it's a one-off match, and they've just got to concentrate on it as a one-off game and try and get a result. I mean, like you say, defensively, Michelle, as Michelle mentioned last week, they were abysmal. But if they can tighten that up and they can, you know, they can take it at half time on level terms, I don't see any reason why they can't get a point.
You've got no idea, have you? Did you see that last game?
I did indeed. I saw it. It was 5-0. I'm being parochial. I'm helping out here in the Central Coast, man. It should have been
9-0.
But they've got to keep it. They've got to keep it level for as long as they can.
Yeah, I think you've got to change the tactics. I think, you know, you can't afford to play 2 up front and 4 Adrian Caceres and all sorts of, you know, you're just too open. So whether he will, really interested to see whether McKinnon has the tactics. You know, whether you can play one man up front and change it around or come up with something different. That's what they certainly got to come up with something different, haven't they?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the opposition they play, though, as we said, I mean, they're a decent side. I mean, 5-0 away from home.
I think it's
home.
More of a test of
Laurie
McKinnon.
They made them look good.
Yeah, they did. They made them look good. They gave away soft goals. But I think it's a test of McKinnon's coaching strategy that, you know, he has to come up with something that can shut down the opposition and play to their limitations.
And I think they do need to get something out of the game, don't they? I mean, they need a point.
They do, because if the results go the other way for Pohang or Tianjin, then they're 8 points behind with 2 games to go, so they're out of
They're out of it, basically. Yeah.
But the team that I think is not out of it is the Newcastle Jets. They're flying. They're in second or joint second place on 4 points, 1 point behind the leader. Now they play, and they drew with the Japanese side Nagoya last week. Nagoya Grampus 8, I think they were called. I don't know whether they're still called Nagoya Grampus. Coached by Dragan Stojkovic. 1-1 they came up with. I mean, but they played beautiful. Beautiful game.
Won all away. That was great.
Won all away. So they'd be hoping to go one better at home, wouldn't they? They've got the Italian guy, Fabio Vignaroli, is back, and he's well worth watching. I think he's getting better every game, but he's worth, you know, he's got a little bit of skill on the ball. And but Lubo, my main man, Milicevic, is out. He's suspended. So whether they'll play Adam Griffith at the back or...
Well, they'll miss Milicevic, won't they? I mean, having the Italian back is a big boost.
Yeah,
and like you said, a good result away from home, 1-1 over there is a good result, and I think they've probably got enough quality at home to beat them. I think they need to. The Australian sides need to go at these sides a little bit more. They were a bit pedestrian in some of the games I've seen them this year. The tempo's a bit slower than what we're used to.
Yeah, well, I think it may be a tough game because, I mean, any Japanese team is generally technically quite nice to watch, but this team not as good as... previous Japanese sides, perhaps.
No. I mean, they did have a lot of the ball, though, the Japanese team, but I guess Newcastle did shut them down. They didn't have any opportunity to do very much with it.
Well, they're talking tactics about Laurie McKenna, and I think Van Engman got his spot on away from home.
Yeah, I think they'll miss Milicevic, though, because I think him and Topper Stanley can, you know, very strong in the central defence. Yeah. And I think that'll be a bit. And Milicevic, obviously, is an organiser. He can play football from the back, which a lot of the. You know, Alex Wilkinson for the Mariners, that's, you know, straight away you're missing that sort of extra person who, and Milicevic can come forward and link, and it really sets the play going nicely. They've also just got better ball players, I think, across the park. Adam Griffiths, Ben Kantorowski, Marco Jesic is injured again, but, you know, Sasha Petrovsky even, the former Mariner, but he links well, you know, so I think he's got him playing well. So can the Jets win?
Yes, definitely, especially at home.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I'm going 2-1 Newcastle.
2-1. Okay, well, and if the Jets win, then there's a good chance they'll go forward in that group and they'll carry forward into the next stage, which will interfere with their A-League campaign. Is that a problem?
I'm sure it won't be a problem for them. It wasn't a problem for Adelaide last year, was it? And I think it wouldn't be a problem for them. I'm sure they'd enjoy it if they got through.
Well, they did. I mean, Adelaide did get to the final, but they limped home in the end, really, didn't they, as a result of the extra travel and stuff. But you're pretty confident, Russ, no probs.
I don't think Newcastle will go as far as Adelaide, so I don't think they'll quite have quite the same problem. Sorry about that, Michelle.
Okay, well, that's all from the Near Post for this week. The local show is being streamed in Canberra, and we'll have the FFA technical director, Han Berger, in one of his first interviews. So stay with us, or get on the web or the podcast for that. Catch us on the blog, www.nearpost.blogspot.com, and wherever you are, whatever you're doing. Russ Gibbs, I know you're out there kicking the ball around. Michelle, you're about to start. Good luck on your games and whatever you're doing. Kick a few goals in. That's what you do.
Well, we'll try our best, yeah.
Try our best. Good on. All right, and if you're going to the Near Post,
get there first.
Near Post, get there first. The Near Post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The Near Post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the Near Post, get there first.
And here we are at the Near Post. My name's Eamon Flanagan. With me is Russ Gibbs, Mr. Local Football Extraordinaire. Been out there watching a bit of the Premier League. Coming up on the show, we've got a bit of news. We'll have Russ's roundup of all things local football, and we've also got an interview with Han Berger. Han is the FFA technical director, was at the National Championships recently, so I got the chance to catch up with him and just ask him a few thoughts on the game of football and what he was doing and some of his background, and we'll find out about him in just a moment. Now, Russ, have you got some news for you? Well, the big news out of Melbourne for the A-League bid.
Yeah,
I mean, it's all early days, but there's a big story in the Herald Sun. Does it affect the A-League bid? I don't know.
Well, we'll have to take it with a pinch of salt until we can get the actual facts and figures. I mean, it's a newspaper story. Yeah, there is, worryingly, there's some quotes from the major backer in the actual story. So that suggests most of it's true. And it'll be interesting to see the ins and outs and the intricacies of it as to whether it is going to affect the A-League bid. Now, we haven't heard anything per se yet, have we? So we're still fingers crossed that it's all going to go ahead.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've had it is a big story in the Herald Sun saying that one of the supporters, as she's known, of the A-League bid, Melissa Fisher, owes a number of million dollars, which might be a concern to you and me, but maybe not to her. But anyway, I think it's more her business, which is she's a director and a part owner, so it's you know, I guess it's all technical losses, as they call it. It is in the nursing home industry, which is a bit of concern. But she's, she's still, from what I've heard, she's still involved in the A-League bid. And I guess also, I think there's some legal action going on. So I wouldn't take the story in the Herald Sun with The biggest grain of salt, actually.
Well, no, I think we've got to wait and see what happens and how it sort of pans out over the next couple of weeks and see whether it does have a knock-on effect to the A-League bid. But at the moment, I'd suggest that it's still all hands to the pump and all systems go.
Yeah, I mean, basically they're saying that she's been putting money into an A-League bid, transferring millions into an A-League bid. Well, I can assure you, camera listeners, there's been no millions transferred in, and if it has been transferred, it hasn't come to us, so
I haven't seen it.
No. Okay. All right, well, we'll follow that story no doubt with interest, but yeah, any publicity is good publicity, is it? I don't know.
Whether or not that is, we'll have to find out.
Okay. All right then, Russ, back to more local matters.
Yeah, I've got the ACT Premier League kicked off on the weekend. We'll talk about that in a minute, as well as some big news coming out of Belconnen United. The Club Pink Premier League round one starts on May the 3rd. I spoke to Chris Goddess at Capital Football today. The fixture list for that will be released shortly. If it hasn't been released today, it will be probably tomorrow. A couple of other local stories. Speaking of Capital Football, they've relaunched their new website. It's been redesigned. It's been a long time coming for them to redesign their website, but apparently it's easier to navigate now, and it's got the same links as it had before. It's now been updated with all the fixtures for the season. Hopefully there'll be some results up there from the State League matches and Premier League games that kicked off on the weekend.
Can I say it's a professional presentation?
It looks very good, doesn't it? It looks much better than it did before.
Yeah, and it was shocking.
Congratulations to Chris and all his hard work.
Yeah, they've done good, as they say, and it's good to see. The communication was one of the things I think outlined in the recent report where they had to be improved, and they've done a good job. So it's great to see, and I think there's lots of news there. It's a nice layout. I'm just looking at it right now, actually.
Yeah, it looks very impressive. I've got a couple of results from the Nationals. Championships. The ACT boys 13 grade side finished 7th in their division, and the ACT girls 14 team, they finished 5th, but that doesn't tell the whole story. They only lost twice in their 6 matches, and they only conceded 3 goals throughout the whole tournament. They drew 3 games. Their one victory was over South Australia by a convincing scoreline of 3-0. But as I said, they only lost twice in 6 games, so a bit unfortunate to finish 5th there.
Been a lot of comments through on the blog about various performances. I mean, it's hard to know, isn't it? I mean, you're into development football. If you really are about developing, then what position you come on the table, I would think, is irrelevant. But I'm sure a couple of football will review the situation, have a look at, their own...
Yeah, I don't think they'll be concerned about where they finish. It's all about the performances, really, and how the players are developing as individuals, as you mentioned.
Yeah, OK. I think there was a bit of a concern. One of the coaches got suspended because of an alleged outburst. But I think, I mean, I'm totally against that. I think that's really, I just think it's not on in any level of football. And I think whether you're playing 6 games or 7 games, you know, and particularly the academy coach, we won't mention the names, everybody probably knows who it is, but I just think it's just, there's no need for it, you know.
There isn't really. I mean, it probably a rush of blood and probably regrets what they did, but
yeah,
at the end
of the
day,
you've got kids around you, and I mean, there's enough sort of testosterone with all the boys playing around at that level, and as they're getting older, I just think, I don't know, I'd certainly be reviewing his position. I think
Need to have a chat.
Yeah.
And see how you go from there.
Sort it.
Absolutely.
Okay, but anyway, yeah, that I don't think that's the standard that we want to aspire to in the local. Now, the Offsider Capital Football has launched its new online magazine. Russ, I noticed you've got a few bits and pieces in there. Good stuff. All right, so again, another part of the communication.
Yeah, read about my predictions of the ACT Premier League, which have gone completely awry in the first round of matches.
Okay, so let's get... Have you got any more news before we get into the Premier League?
I don't at the moment, unfortunately.
All righty. So let's get into the Premier League.
Well, I'll start by with the news that we've spoken about coming out of Belconnen, that Danny Makor has walked out on the club and signed for Canberra Olympic, which we've had Danny in here before, and he walked out on Belconnen last year to play State League football.
Yeah.
And then he went down, and apparently there's something going on behind the scenes there, and he's signed for Canberra Olympic, which makes their squad even more formidable.
Oh, so what's going on, Russ? Do we know what's going on behind the scenes? Or
I haven't heard yet. I've got my ears to the ground, and my scout's out and about to try and find out what's happening there, so we'll endeavour to find out what's going on with Danny and why he's made the switch to Canberra Olympic, the Federation Cup runners-up.
Okay, big loss for Belco. Now, what were the scores going?
Well, we'll start with probably the one of the biggest results of the weekend. ANU FC, who I have said on here, I thought they might struggle in the Premier League this year, and they've gone and proved me completely wrong in the first round by beating the O'Connor Knights, who made the 4 last year, 3-0 in the first game of the season. Svon Rogic with a brace, and Luke Pilkington, another youngster who we've had as a guest in here, scoring the goals for John Mitchell's team and getting them off to an absolute flyer. 3-0 over O'Connor and Reddy. I mean, we didn't see that one coming, did we?
Well, I did, because they're my team on the near post this year. I'm following the ANU, so I know Russ, you've been sort of saying then they won't do much good, but I'm delighted to see that they got a win. But okay,
it's excellent, and it's good news for John Mitchell and the youngsters, and they, by all accounts, they played some terrific stuff, and we'll wait and see to see whether they can keep that on. And they're actually on top of the grade on alphabetical order from Woden Valley, who I tipped to finish last, so I'm doing well at the moment. It's 2-2 from me.
It's a long season, Russ.
It is a long season. Woden Valley, who many people, and even their coach Paul Gaghetti I spoke to, he didn't think they'll do anything this season. He was very surprised. They will beat Canberra City 3-0, goals from Steve Bowman, Ben Rundle and Tal Evans, which is also doubles up as the first leg of the Canberra Lifeline Cup, which is a competition that the two play between each other. So Canberra City are going to have it all to do in the second leg to come back from that one, having lost 3-0. That was also another bit of a surprise.
Sure is. And who else you got there?
Canberra FC got off to a winning start. They beat Queanbeyan City 1-0 with a goal from Alex Castro, the player that scored both goals in the Federation Cup final draw, which they won on penalties a couple of weeks ago. Less convincing than we probably thought it would be, having beaten Queanbeyan City 6-0 in the Federation Cup pool stages pre-season. So only the one goal for Canberra FC, and maybe the loss of Paul Ivanick, which they didn't seem to be missing pre-season when they scored 32 goals or whatever it was in their six matches, is going to come home to roost.
Maybe. So interesting that they only got the one goal. And
yep, finally, at Canbar 2, the Field of Dreams, as they call it down at Tuggeranong, Scott Conlon returned to his former club and came away with the points with a 3-1 victory over Tuggeranong United. A brace of goals from David Leet and one from Ian Walden from the penalty spot gave Bell Conlon a 3-1 victory. Pete McLaughlin replying for Tuggeranong in a game in which Bell Conlon were very much worthy winners.
And what are the fixtures then for this weekend?
This weekend, there's one game on Saturday, which is at Canberra 2. Tuggeranong United play Queanbeyan City, in which should be an absolute cracker. There's no love lost between those two teams. That dates back from a few years ago in the State League when they got to a grand final and had some very feisty encounters. So that should be one to watch. And on Sunday, top of the table at ANU North, ANU FC versus Woden Valley. Canberra City play Canberra FC at O'Connor Enclosed, and perhaps the pick of the weekend's games is at Woden Enclosed, where Canberra Olympic with Danny Makor will play the O'Connor Knights.
Okay, good start to the first round, I guess, and good to see a few topsy-turvy results to get the interest going in the league this season. Now, we've got an interview with the FFA Technical Director, Han Berger, so I caught up with him at the National Championships, and this is what Han had to say. I'm talking to FFA Technical Director Hans Berger. Hans, welcome to camera.
Thank you very much. It's not the first time I'm here, but always enjoying being in the camera.
Hans, a lot of people, I guess, in Australia wouldn't know a lot about your background. Could you just give us a little bit of your background before you arrived in this job?
Yeah, I've been actually in football all my life, first as a player, but unfortunately I had to stop playing at the age of 22 because of a very severe knee injury. But then I had already finished sports high school, so immediately I could go into coaching. I was the youngest head coach ever in Dutch professional football by the age of 25. And yeah, I coached for over 25 years in the top division in Holland, several teams like Utrecht, which is my hometown team, and Groningen, AZ Alkmaar, they're going to be the champions this year, I think, and Sparta Rotterdam. And I coached in the Japan J-League for FC Oita Trinita, and I was Olympic coach for the Dutch national team and technical director for the Royal Netherlands Football Association. So I've been more or less in the coaching job for a long time, and then I went more to the technical director job.
So just for the technical director of the FFA, what how do you see that role? What exactly does that role entail?
Well, as it says, as the name says, it's up to me to give a technical direction for football in Australia. And Yeah, actually we have a very ambitious goal setting. Australia in future years wants to be one of the top footballing nations. We want to be in the top 20 of the FIFA ranking and later on maybe in the top 10 of the FIFA ranking. And we want to improve the level of the game in Australia and become a top footballing nation. And as you know, we want to organize the World Cup in either 2018 or 2022. But Frank Lowy, our chairman, he made it quite clear. We not only want to organize it, but we want to be able to win it. So then there's a lot of work to be done because we already have some very good players at the top, but they were more or less raised and developed overseas. But in order to achieve these high goal settings, we have to raise a standard here in Australia and get the development and the level of the players and the level of the game to the overseas level in order to be able to become a top footballing nation.
Is that possible, Hans, given that so many of our players go overseas and so much of the money in football attracts, as soon as a player like Bruce Jeter, Nathan Burns, start to shine, they're gone. Yeah. Is it really possible for us to raise the standard of the game in Australia so high? Yeah. Do you feel?
It is a tremendous challenge. There are lots of difficulties on the path, but difficulties are there to challenge them and to overcome them. And I think there is a huge potential in Australia, huge potential.
Why do you say that? I mean, obviously you've not been in Australia for particularly long, but why do you see this feeling of a huge potential?
I think because they're... the sports mentality in Australia is perfect, and football is still in the developing phase. So I think there are many unidentified players. The game is still not the biggest game, and many children do not really know the game yet. So if we can convince them of the attraction of the game, there will be a big potential to develop. And as I say, we are still far behind the European or South American nations, but the potential is there, and I think we have to get everybody convinced that we can develop it. And it's, you know, I come from the Netherlands. That's also an exporting country for players. Holland produces many good players. I think Real Madrid has six Dutch players at the moment, so they also go away. But not every player can go away.
But you probably do have the advantage that, I suppose, football in Holland is the number one code, whereas here, we're competing against some other big codes, which adds another challenge for you.
Yeah, that's also a challenge. I understand that, and I know that football is not the number one sport in Australia, but it's growing very rapidly. And if we qualify now for South Africa again, a lot of publicity will come, positive publicity will come from the media for football, and many more children will choose for football. And we need to make it more accessible for everyone, because I think it's more expensive for children and then also for the parents to play football.
That's a really good point. I mean, football to me is a very simple game. You get the ball, you get your coat, and away you have a go. But it's really quite expensive to play football. What are your thoughts on that? Is that possible to change that again?
Yeah. We are working right now on a national curriculum, which will give a guideline for many of the challenges we have to overcome. And also there's a chapter in the national curriculum about, as I call it, the financial barrier for football. Because football became the world's game because it's so easy accessible for everyone, rich or poor. You only need a ball and you can play. So if it's, if there is a financial barrier, which I think there is in Australia, we have to do something about it and make football accessible for everyone.
I think you're right. I think that's a really important point. As a grassroots supporter here, I think, as a former teacher, I think, yeah, football basically should be free. Not just from the football point of view, but from a health point of view. I think it's the game that the kids are all playing. If we can make it basically free, then it would be a wonderful thing for the game. And one of the major things that you're working on is the national curriculum. Is that the main thing that you're working on at the moment?
At the moment, that is a priority. Because everybody's waiting for that. Everybody's waiting for FFA to give guidelines for the future. What do we want and how do we think we can achieve it?
And is that your main... Are you the sort of responsible for that curriculum or is it somebody else within the FFA?
No, that's mainly my responsibility. And of course, my predecessor, Robert Baan, already did a lot of work on that, but... Again, it's a priority to finish that, and we will come forward with that shortly. And then the next challenge is there to implement it, because a curriculum on itself is not enough, because you can put it in a drawer and everything, nothing will change. And that's not my goal setting. So then we have to implement it and try to get it working and alive nationwide, and that's even a bigger challenge than producing the curriculum.
It's a huge job that you're laying out in front of you, from trying to make football perhaps cheaper for people to produce the quality of players that you require. We're at the National Junior Championships in Canberra. Just as an observation, you've obviously seen a day's play, I guess, and what are your thoughts on the standard of play that you've seen?
Well, I'm positively surprised. I was here already since Friday, so I also saw our under-15s here in Canberra playing Japan twice. They did very well. One win, 3-2. And
I just want to ask you about that, because obviously everybody talks about the Japanese football. We saw it with Kawasaki versus the Central Coast. You know, they're so technical, they're so gifted on the ball. And the under-15s, how did you find the difference there between the two countries?
As I just told you, I also coached in the J-League, so I know my bit of Japanese football, and it's a different type of game, more skillful, I think. More the boys are more skillful on the ball and quick. But our under-15 did surprisingly well. They played very well. There were two very interesting and open games with lots of chances on both sides, but... Oh, we won 3-2 on Friday. We 2-2 yesterday, so very good results. And Japan is seen as a very high standard of the game in youth football.
And are we seeing any changes yet with those under-15s? I mean, obviously there's been a lot more focus on ball development in the last 3 or 4 years, just across Australia at the clubs and things, probably still not high enough level, but there has been a lot of more coaching schools going on. Are we seeing that coming through yet through the under-15 level, or still we're a long way off?
No, I think we still have some space to cover and some time to go and to match up with the highest level. But I noticed that from the discussions also that people are understanding more and more that we have to change. We have to focus in the young ages on technique and skill development, and not in the first place on with youth players on results and on strength and conditioning. And but the technique and the skills, they are the basis and the foundation, the most important foundation of the game. And strength and conditioning and tactics you can all bring in later. But skills you have to bring in between 8 and 12 years, because those are that's the perfect phase to learn the motor skills. And also here, I'm surprised with the level. There obviously is a difference between players and between teams. Some better, some not so good. But also here you see a lot of talented kids. If you work with them in the appropriate way, they can develop to high standard players.
And are you involved with the Socceroos at any level or in the A League in terms of the technical direction leading to those areas?
Of course, also there. Of course, the Socceroos, that's Pim's responsibility. But you know, I'm like a kind of an advisor to Pim, and also the things we develop, they have to be in line. It would be very strange if we have a certain philosophy for all of the youth teams, and the philosophy Pim is using on the Socceroos would be totally different. That wouldn't be logical. And also our plans with regards to Australian football affect the A-League, because also the level of the A-League must improve. And now there are also many players leaving for top footballing nations like Europe. It's logical. It will always happen that your best players will go overseas. But our second tier is now going to second tier countries, and that's something we have to find a solution for, because they're not developing into better players there, and it affects the level of the A-League and the domestic football in a negative way. So we have to find solutions for that as well.
I mean, basically, a lot of this comes down to money, I guess. If a player's offered money in, whether it's China or, a second-tier European nation, they generally go. Can we ever have enough money to keep the players here? And is it a good thing to keep the players here in Australia? I mean, would that be good for the national team?
Now, again, if the players go to top football nations and to good teams, they develop into better players, so it's also good for the national teams. But if they go to second level or third level nations or second or third level clubs, the level there is not better than we could have here. But the level here is dropping because too many players are going away then, and that's the worry, and that's something we have to find solutions for. And I think, yes, in the future we could be financially more stronger. Maybe not to compete with the top nations in Europe or South America. But in Asia, I think Australia will be able to be one of the best footballing nations. It obviously will not happen overnight. It will take time. It will not happen next year, but in the future, if you see what steps have been made in the last 4 or 5 years, in 4 or 5 years or 10 years, this could be possible and should be achieved in order to achieve the goal settings.
Is this the most difficult job you've ever had?
No, I don't think so, but it is certainly the most challenging. And if it's the most difficult, time will tell. But there are lots of challenges, and I like to talk about challenges and not about difficulties.
And so how long is your appointment for, Hans?
My appointment is to the end of 2012, for 4 years. 4 years is a long time in football, so I hope some of these points we've been discussing now will be achieved in that period of time.
Well, I'm sure it's not going to be an easy job. Everybody's got an opinion about football, haven't they? And I suppose when the national curriculum comes out, everybody will be having their say. But, I wish you the best of luck for Australia's sake, if not for your own.
Okay, but that's the same everywhere across the world. Everybody wants to discuss football, and you have media all over the world, so that's nothing new for me. And
just on the final point, how have you found it in Australia in terms of the media coverage and just the coverage of football, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit similar as it is in England. You know, there's a lot of competition also in the media, so there's a lot of different opinions. Also with media, if you want to please them all, it's impossible. As a coach or as a technical director, And also in media it is if 90% has opinion A, there's always like 10% who have opinion B then, if only to have a different opinion. So, you know, I don't really worry about that. I have my own ideas. I listen to people and discuss. I'm happy to discuss everything with everybody, but I'm not here to please the press. I'm here to try to achieve progression for football in Australia.
Well, wish you all the best, Hans. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
All
right. Welcome.
Cheers.
And that was FFA Technical Director Han Berger. Han is, I guess, into a four-year job, and his national curriculum will be coming out in a few weeks, so we'll look forward to that. Now, Russ, another development in Canberra football. A group of fans have got together to start a football forum. Have you had a look at it, or what do you think?
Yeah, I've been on and had a brief look at it. I think it's the right way to go. They've got some interesting topics up there. I noticed that they're talking about Canberra United, the supporters group, and the Canberra League bid, amongst other things. So they obviously want to encourage people to get on there and voice their opinions. So I think it's a positive thing.
Yeah, it is. They've got there's been a I guess if you go to the blog Near Post, www.nearpost.blogspot.com, you'll find a link to the football forum on the right hand side of the page. Just to point out, I'm not involved in the forum, but
neither
is Russ, but we're fully supportive of it. Just good to see that other people are getting people's voices together and connecting in various ways, and they're talking about things, the A-League bid, the Canberra United, W League. So I reckon during the W League season, I reckon it will really take off. I think they'll get a lot of a lot of discussion about the coaches, etc., and the players and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, like we had last year on the Near Post with people being hypercritical of some of the players. So,
yeah, I think
it's all about opinions.
That's right, and I think also the forum is a lot easier than one person's blog to generate discussion. So I think that'll be good. Now, we've got a couple of minutes left, and Russ, you were chatting to me earlier about the ethics of management in England. Talk us through the Rafael Benitez, Alex Ferguson saga.
Yeah, Rafael Benitez, after Fernando Torres scored his second goal on the weekend for Liverpool, Rafa Benitez did a sort of that's over gesture, which Sam Allardyce, the Blackburn manager, found very dismissive. Alex Ferguson chimed in with his...
just be careful what you say, because I've got... coming up after this show is the Spanish show, and there's a couple of Spanish people...
That's all right,
people.
It's all about Rafa.
There's a couple of Spanish people behind you, giving you... Don't say anything naughty about Rafa.
Alex Ferguson chimed in with... he was being very dismissive and bringing being contemptive of the game and that. And then Alex went and fielded a pseudo-youth team in the FA Cup semi-final against Everton, and somebody rightly pointed out was that not bringing the game into disrepute and being a little bit nasty to Everton.
It's only the FA Cup.
And
they still couldn't beat them, even with...
They still couldn't.
And as David Moyes said, if United had put out an under-14 team, it would still be a very good side. What a load of rubbish.
That is rubbish. Everton would have beaten them about 8-0, truly.
Now, Timmy Cahill's going to be at the Cup final.
He is, so let's hope they don't give him a penalty.
So two Aussies in the cup final this year, which is great.
Yeah, it's great. Good news for Australian football, isn't it? It's
Timmy Cahill, who's your law?
putting me on the spot, that is.
Aussie Gus.
Who's playing? Everton and Chelsea.
Yeah,
Aussie Gus, obviously, yeah. Aussie Gus is going to be there.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's going to be good. It's a bit different, and leaves United... I'm just going for the...
Yeah, that's enough about Manchester practice. United. Now, what about you, Russ? We've got a few seconds left. Just on your own game. You started playing, have you?
Yeah, we did. We got off to on the weekend down in State League Division 5 and managed to get home 11-0, which was a nice start.
Fantastic.
To the season.
That's a great result for football.
It was one of those games for the opposition. I don't think anything really happened, came right for them, and we were just a bit ruthless when we got our chances, and we'll wait and see. It's still early days, so.
Okay, and where are you off to this weekend? You got a game?
Well, we've actually deferred our match this weekend. We're playing the Chris Gottes-inspired UCU Pumas, and they've asked to defer it to Thursday night under the lights next week up at USC, so that we can all have a long hands that weekend.
I've heard that Chris Gottes he thinks that's the best tactic, that you're with your eyesight under lights.
I think
you could have a job.
Probably have an idea. Yeah, they went 2-0 on the weekend as well. So congratulations to UC, and congratulations to everyone who got off to win on the weekend.
And even those that lost.
And even those that lost as well. And better luck next week.
Okay, and thanks very much, Russ. And we'll hear from you again next week. And if you're going to the Near Post,
get there first.
Near Post, get there first. The Near Post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The Near Post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst. The Near Post, get there first.